Sound Opinions is supported by Goose Island Beer Company, which brews beers that are highly rated by beer critics and beer lovers alike. More at gooseisland.com. We don't need to be the only beer you drink. We just want to be the best beer you drink.
This is Sound Opinions, and later on, Jim, we are going to review the new album from one of Chicago hip-hop's icons, really, Lupe Fiasco, his sixth studio album. And we're also going to dig deep into one of his older songs in our new edition of Sample Platter, in which we dig into the sample behind one of Lupe's finest pieces of music. But first, we've got the go-to-beds.
Greg, we are both big fans of the Go-To-Beds, and I'm not only a super fan because they're named after the drummer in Wire. First fell in love with this group through their indie recordings and seeing them at South by Southwest. The last album made my best of 2016 list. The roots of the group go back to this arty hardcore punk band in Pittsburgh called Kim Fook. When guitarist Eli Kazan and Tom Payne first came together, Eli had another vision for a different project, and they added bassist Gavin Jensen and drummer Carrie Belbeck. Came to the attention of Gerard Kozloy at Matador Records, co-founder of that prestigious label, and he released the first album, Poor People Are Revolting, on his little side label, 12XU, another Wire connection, back in 2014. The follow-up came out on Sub Pop last year, Blood, Sugar, Sex, Traffic. Clearly, these guys love puns, that one being a pun on the Red Hot Chili Peppers album.
Yes, sarcasm, sarcasm, sarcasm. These guys have a sense of humor. It filters through their music. It may not be immediately apparent, but it is there. And let me tell you, having these guys in the studio, Jim, it was a lot of fun because the jokes were flying.
That was some of the most laughs we've had in a long time.
And that was reflective of the character of that Pittsburgh music scene, I think, as well, which they are out of. You know, that is not a nationally known scene, but it is very much a vibrant one. And I asked Eli Kazan about what the music scene in Pittsburgh was really like.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, like, historically, like any blue-collar town, that just punk and hardcore and, like, any kind of, like, heavier genre always plays a little better than the artier stuff. Like, that's looked at as, like, a bourgeois New York thing, which is probably still a chip we have on our shoulder, even though we're probably doing a bourgeois New York thing. Yeah, and it's also one of those things where it's such a... The rest of the country is finding out that it's a really comfortable place to live, and it kind of always has been, and it's been growing. So, I mean, from that, it's like if you're playing a band there and you have some success, even though you're close to other places, you get stuck in that trap where bands just don't leave. I mean, some people aren't interested in schlepping it to Ohio where, you know, they're not received as well or that kind of thing. So we have had bands break out, but it seems like they generally, or at least in the past, have stayed put.
Mm-hmm. But there's places for bands to play and work things out, it sounds like. You know?
Oh, yeah. There's tons of places to play. You'd be really surprised how many different competing clubs. At a certain point, there was certainly more places to play live than there were bands.
Is there any frustration with not having wider recognition, not having more of an industry, even on a sort of an indie level? It's more about individual bands, you know? Bands feel like if they want to get anywhere, they have to move out of town?
Yeah, I mean, you look at the bands that have done it, like Black Moth Super Rainbow, or Zombie, or Girl Talk, Wiz Khalifa.
Don Caballero.
All those bands have really had to get out of town before they made any kind of national name.
Mm-hmm.
But the irony people never understand is it's easier to get out of town when you're paying a couple of $100 in rent than when it is in New York or Brooklyn, you know, and you're paying an arm and a leg, yeah.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, there's something about that where, like, you can... just take more risks in those regards where you're not as worried about having some place to come back to.
And I also like the idea that, cities create character and the fact that regionalism still exists in rock.
Well, I mean, it's funny that you mentioned the regionalism because I think that, I don't want to say with the advent of the internet, but I mean, the idea that those kind of borders dissolved when you could get anything out online.
Yeah.
But there are still cities that do have specific sounds or that idea that those still exist or that you can rep a place hard. That's not saying that every band sounds like... the Go-To-Beds in Pittsburgh, but still those ideas that, like, once upon a time it was like, hey, D.C. sounds like D.C. because they're swapping members, people know each other, they're influenced by each other.
Yeah.
Things like that. That was don't want to say our generation. It's not like we're old.
Pat. Yeah. You're listening to Sound Opinions. I'm Greg Codd with Jim DeRogatis. We're in the studio with the Go-To-Beds, Eli, Carrie, Gavin, Tom. Guys, you got a song you want to play for us?
This will be for a tour single. It's also off our demo. It's called Blank Stares. Mm. It's a Richard Hell joke. I say blank.
Mm-hmm.
Like the stare.
Well, explain it for people who have no idea who Richard Hell is or your sense of humor yet.
Okay, yeah. Well, look it up on Wikipedia. Get a damn clue is what I said.
Blank Stares from the Go-To-Beds on Sound Opinions. A treat, a new song.
Ferocious.
A tribute to the great Richard Hell and the Blank Generation.
Well, there is this two-guitar thing happening. Richard Hell and the Voidoids, you know, that interplay between Robert Quine and Ivan Julian. And there's a little bit of television going on, that Richard Lloyd, Tom Verlaine thing. You know, is that something you think about, the way the two guitars interact?
We are the two that will rehearse together sometimes, and it's usually just like, hey, do you want to have a beer and kind of goof around on something? And there's a song on the new record called Rope, and that was one of the few that we wrote together. It's just like guitars.
Yeah, and there is this kind of ropey thing of the two guitars intertwining.
Oh, great work, Jim.
Wow. Oh, damn.
Tell us about recording the first album, Poor People Are Revolting. I love that title. Is it true it was recorded in one day?
Well, yeah, the basic tracking was done in one day, and then we added like a bunch of junk to it for a long time afterwards. We're just like, the initial idea was we were like, hey, we'll do a 7-inch, and I was slated for another label. And the guy that records our stuff, he has a studio in his basement. He was like, it's too much to set up just to do like 2 or 4 songs. He's like, why don't you just wait till you have a bunch of stuff, come in, just clear everything off, and then we'll pick through the wreckage. Mm. And that's when Gerard got in touch, and he was really pulling for an LP. At that point, he said, I want an LP, an EP, and then a 7-inch, like in that order. I'll take anything, but I want an LP. Like, I don't want to do just a single. And I just lied and was like, yeah, we have this whole record done. And then like 10 months later, we finished it. It was so long.
So, Gerard Cosley, we mentioned that name earlier, one of the founders, co-founders of Matador Records, you know, on the side, because he can't get enough music, has this 12XU label. So, is it a little daunting when a man who's put out records by Sonic Youth, by, name, you know, 10 of the best indie underground bands of the last 10 years, you know, the first woman, man to put out Liz Phair, you know, I mean, this guy's a giant.
Well, he's not that tall, but I mean, he is he looms large in my mind. He was great. Like, when I first got in touch with him, I was like, hey, we'd love to work with you at 12XU. And then he wrote back, this is where it was intimidating when I didn't know him. And he was like, thanks for the package. What do you think I can do for you that you can't do for yourself? Mm. And at that point, it was like, oh, I mean, you have money and influence. We have neither. Can we have some?
That's interesting because, Carrie, maybe you can speak to this a little bit. The band didn't seem like overly ambitious, like we're going to conquer the world, we're going to put out records on, you know, Universal Music, and we're going to be the biggest band in the world. It seemed like you guys were happy to be having your day jobs and doing this gig on the side. It wasn't like an overweening ambition to become the biggest band in the world. Or maybe I've got that completely wrong.
Yeah, no, yeah, I mean, we never really took ourselves too seriously. We never thought we would get to this point. So, you know, we just always had that mind frame.
There is something funny about, like, with the humor and stuff like that, is if you see a band take themselves too seriously, it's painful. It's dreadfully painful to see a band take themselves really, really seriously.
And boring.
And also, I think it's weird when you have a band that, like, in between songs, they're really goofy and then they're playing really serious songs. I mean, I think that for us, it's like the humor had to be part of it just because that's who we are. And if not, then it's not an accurate representation of what we're trying to do.
You guys are legendary for giving these shows that just completely come apart at the seams and then somehow fold themselves back together again and then come apart again. Clearly unrehearsed, unscripted. But you seem to live for those accidents and car wrecks on stage, or not.
The way that we always talk about it is like the band is its own kind of monster that just drives itself and we have no control over it. Like sometimes we'll just be way too drunk to play, so it's like, oh, we're not doing so well, we better be entertaining, and we'll just start climbing over each other. And like, I punched Gavin in the stomach before we unplug each other.
There's only one thing that's off the table. Don't throw a handful of darts at a bar at TFP's face. Sorry, buddy.
Handful of darts. Yeah. That wouldn't work. That
I wasn't aiming for him, but I still feel really bad about it.
That was one and done.
Yeah. Yeah. How about another song, guys?
Yeah, this is a new one. The tentative title is Animal, but that's just because, the tentative title was Animal from the Muppets, because that's what Carrie looks like when he plays it. It'll be called something else on the record, but this is a new one.
Living without swan song. You're not anyone. Rally round the front, circle round the train, living without options. You get up! It's been like this before. Never had the option. I know when you always ask me more, more, more. I could see the animals rising to the surface. I could see the animals rising to the surface. You're my swan song.
That's the Go-To-Beds performing Animal live on Sound Opinions. We'll have more with the band after a short break, and later we'll review the new album from Chicago rapper Lupe Fiasco. That's in a minute on Sound Opinions from WBEZ Chicago and PRX.